The next chapter is about basic chemistry, which is really important in cell biology because really what's happening in cell biology inside the cell is chemistry, like I've said. So if you've had a chemistry course, this is not going to be new stuff to you. If you haven't, some of this will be new. But even if you have had this before and it's not new, it's good to hear it again. I'll probably be referring to the periodic table of the elements, which is behind you, as we go through this. But what we have in slide one in pictorial form is a representation of a chemical reaction. A chemical reaction involves some number of reactants, which are the things on the left side of the reaction equation, that get transformed into some number of products, which are on the right side of the reaction. The arrow is like the equal side, equal sign of a mathematical equation. This is a reaction equation. So in this example, sodium and chlorine are the reactants. They react to form sodium chloride, the product. Now, this is a really good example to illustrate how fundamentally different products can be from reactants, even though it's really just a rearrangement of stuff. Chemistry is really just a rearrangement of electrons. And we'll talk about these subatomic particles in a minute, but that's really what's happening with chemistry. A rearrangement of electrons, and that can profoundly affect the properties of the stuff you have. So let's think about sodium here. Notice that the person handling this sodium has gloves on. Very important. You never want to touch sodium metal. It is so highly reactive that the little bit of moisture in your fingers will make it explosively react. It will hurt you. You don't want to be near pure sodium. Similarly, chlorine is a poisonous gas. You don't want any part of pure chlorine either. It's very highly reactive, which is why it's used to clean pools and things like that. So either one of these things will kill you in their elemental form. You get them together, though, and by this rearrangement of electrons that we call chemical reaction, sodium chloride is produced. Now, sodium chloride not only is not going to kill you, we know it as table salt, but you also cannot live without it. So it not only doesn't kill you, it's absolutely essential to life for various reasons. And so just a rearrangement of electrons, no addition or subtraction of any matter, just a rearrangement of particles fundamentally changes the properties of the stuff. And that really is what's happening inside of cells all the time, yeah.
You know how like when we sweat, like it's kind of like salty? If we didn't have like that much salt, would our sweat be like not salty?
Yeah, in fact, what makes sweat work is that it's watery. It's mostly watery. The reason that we feel salty is because when that sweat evaporates, which is what allows us to cool, that's when the heat gets released from the body is during the evaporation. It's only the water component that evaporates. The salt gets left behind, just like if you boil salt water and forget the pots on the stove, come back 5 hours later, it's a totally dry pan with solid salt crystals in the bottom. That's left behind because it doesn't evaporate. So it's not really all that salty drop by drop. But as you lose just the water and leave the salt behind, it cakes the skin. Okay, so this is a chemical reaction. We'll look at it in different forms in a minute. But let's look at a different schematic representation of a chemical reaction in slide two. Here you have hydrogen and oxygen reacting to form water. What's happening in any given chemical reaction? I said it's a rearrangement of electrons. Well, that's kind of a general way of saying that in any chemical reaction, certain bonds, chemical bonds, are broken and certain chemical bonds are formed. So notice the bonding here represented by the lines between these balls, which represent atoms. They get rearranged. There are bonds holding atoms of hydrogen together to form hydrogen molecules. There is a bond between oxygen atoms to form an oxygen molecule. Well, they get broken in the process of this chemical reaction, and they reform as bonds between hydrogen and oxygen in water molecules. This is an example of emergent properties. Did we talk about emergent properties last time? Water is obviously watery, right? Hydrogen and oxygen are not themselves watery. So chemical reaction fundamentally changes the properties. By the way, in this case, it wouldn't have to be this. This just this specific example reminds me to tell you this. In both of these cases, the salt one and this one, the reactants in these specific examples are examples of elements, whereas the products in both of these examples are compounds. Now, what makes something an element, or what is an element? Well, all chemicals, all things that are, all substances, all matter, everything that's made of matter is made of atoms. Some of those substances are elements. Most of them aren't. There are millions of different chemicals, and the list is always increasing because we manufacture millions of chemicals that have never existed before. But just naturally occurring, there's millions of compounds out there, substances. Almost all of those are compounds. Only a very few of them are elements. In fact, the elements are exhaustively listed there in the periodic table of the elements. In all of nature, not just Earth, there's only these little over 100 elements. And the list grows because we keep making new elements in the laboratory. Now these new ones in the hundreds and beyond, they only last a tiny, tiny fraction of a second, but that's a breakthrough in chemistry if you're able to do it. Anyway, the naturally occurring elements are the ones toward the top, up to about 100. But back to the question of what qualifies a substance as an element. What is it that makes, for instance, helium an element, which is number 2 on the periodic table? Yeah.
It's like all the same atoms and molecules. It's not like compounds of different types of molecules.
Except for the word molecule, you're exactly correct. An element is a substance made up of only one kind of atom. All the atoms in that substance are the same type. Okay? Whereas a compound is made up of two or more kinds of atoms, like water. Water is made up of oxygen atoms and hydrogen atoms. Whereas hydrogen is just hydrogen atoms, oxygen is just oxygen atoms. Those are both elements. How we can have different kinds of atoms, we'll get to in a little bit. First, though, let's go to 3. This is a table of not all the elements, but not even all the elements that are in your body, but this is the biggies. This is what makes up most of you. Some of the elements that are vital, that you really need, importantly, you only need a tiny, tiny amount of, and more than that is actually bad. These ones listed here are elements that occur pretty abundantly in your body, and not just the human body, basically all organisms. Notice, though, that the first 4 are especially abundant, making up almost all of you in terms of the number of atoms. And they are oxygen, carbon, hydrogen, and nitrogen, as you see. This makes sense because of what I said earlier when I mentioned the 4 biological macromolecule categories, which are lipids, polysaccharides, polypeptides, and polynucleotides, right? Or other names that are allowed for those that I've discussed. Those are all not only macromolecules, but they, more specifically, are organic macromolecules, which means they all have carbon in them. So carbon is up here for that reason. Organic molecules in general not only have carbon, but they have hydrogen as well, and often oxygen, and often nitrogen as well. So all 4 of those categories of macromolecules that all living things are made out of, have carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen in them. Two of them, in addition to those three, also have nitrogen in them. Proteins do, and nucleic acids do. Polysaccharides and lipids have carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen only. So, since these are the building blocks of life, the four atom types that make those up make up all organisms, along with lesser amounts of some other important ones. But the ones that are down here, calcium, phosphorus, and so on, which are important for various reasons, notice also that they are not very far down on the periodic table. The farther you go down on the periodic table, the heavier elements, those are the things that you really want to not have in your body at all and stay alive. Most of the things that are in living things are toward the top, the first few rows. Okay, now some more information on atoms themselves. In slide 4, we're looking at a cartoon, a so-called planetary model of an atom, because it looks like planets orbiting a sun. I say this is a cartoon not only because it's literally drawn as a cartoon, but because it's not the truth. This is just a model. So it's nice to have this in mind to understand atoms or to think about atoms, but this is not really how atoms are. Atoms, though, are almost inconceivably tiny structures. All material is made out of atoms, but they are so tiny that it takes trillions and trillions of them just before you start seeing them visibly. And so there's an enormous number of atoms in your overall body. There are millions and millions of atoms just in a single cell, which is small enough that you can't even see it. And you have 100 trillion cells. So you have many, many millions times 100 trillion atoms in your body. Very tiny. As tiny as they are, though, an atom is not a fundamental particle. An atom is made of even smaller particles. And we're not going to even go to as small as they can get in this course. What we're going to go to is one step below the atom to the three primary subatomic particles. Subatomic means smaller than an atom. Underneath an atom is what it literally means. And so any given atom can contain three subatomic particles called electrons, protons, and neutrons. Now, before we get to these three particle types in more detail, let me say that there's two overall spatial regions within an atom. These aren't structures, they're just spaces. There's the nucleus, which is the center part of an atom. It's just the space in the center. It's not an actual object. And then there's everything around that nucleus. Okay? Well, neutrons and protons are the only kinds of subatomic particles of these three that you'll find in the nucleus. And that's the only place you'll find them. So the nucleus is made up of some number of protons and neutrons. Now, as far as protons are concerned, it's always at least one, because if you don't have at least one proton, you don't have an atom. The number of neutrons is zero or more. In other words, it's possible for an atom not to have any neutrons, but it has to have at least one proton. And most atoms have both, some number of both, some protons and some neutrons. Neutrons, linguistically, are named for the fact that they are electrostatically neutral, which means they don't have any electrical charge. They are neutral particles. That's not the same as protons. Protons are charged particles. Specifically, they are positively charged. Each individual proton carries a positive one charge, a full charge. As you can see in the cartoon, protons and neutrons are the same size, at least almost identical size and mass. It's not quite the same, but to a few decimal places, which all we care about in this course, they are the same size. So a proton and a neutron have the same mass, pretty much. But a neutron doesn't have any charge, and a proton has a positive charge. Much, much smaller. Now, the proton and neutrons are already tiny, tiny, tiny things. But they both are enormous compared to an electron, the third type of subatomic particle. Electrons are never found in the nucleus. They're always found somewhere around the nucleus. Not in a perfect orbit like a planet, which is why this is called the planetary model. That's why this is false. This is not the truth. But it's okay to have this as a mental concept. Anyway, electrons, like protons, are charged particles, but they are dwarfed in size by protons and neutrons. Despite that huge disparity in size, an electron has a charge whose size is equal to the charge of a proton, but in the opposite direction. So a tiny single electron has a charge in the negative direction that is the same size as the positive charge of an enormous, comparatively, proton. And that means even though electrons are much smaller, if you have the same number of electrons as you have protons, then they add up to zero. The charges add up to zero. And the neutrons don't contribute because they're zero to begin with, right? This means that in what we call an atom or a neutral atom, there is no overall charge because there's the same number of electrons as there are protons. And there might or might not be neutrons depending on what element it is. Okay? Now that doesn't mean that an atom cannot have any charge, but we don't call it an atom anymore if it does. The reason that it could have a charge is that it could be in the situation where the number of electrons does not equal the number of protons, right? In which case, the negatives and positives would not add up to zero. They would add up either to a negative number or to a positive number, depending on whether you have fewer electrons than protons or more electrons than protons. We don't call that an atom, though. What do we call it? It really is an atom, but it's an atom with a charge, which gets its own name. Yes, it's an ion. Okay, now ions, if you think about this, you could achieve a charge in either of two ways, or actually four ways. You could add or subtract electrons, or you could add or subtract protons, right? Any one of those four things would change the charge from zero to either a positive or a negative. But only two of those things happen in normal chemistry. When you're talking about chemistry, the nuclei stay where they are, stay composed of the same thing. So you don't, under normal chemical situations, change the number of protons. In the chemical reactions that we showed, those nuclei stay as whatever nuclei they are. What get changed are the electrons. That's why I said chemistry is a rearrangement of electrons. And so ions are formed not by changing the number of protons, but by changing the number of electrons. There's still two ways you can do that, though, right? You can add electrons or subtract electrons while keeping the proton number the same. And that's going to make either a positively charged or a negatively charged ion. Now, how do you make a negatively charged ion? You do what with the electrons? You add more because each of those is negative, right? A neutral atom is at zero because the number of electrons equals the number of protons. If you add another electron without changing anything about the nucleus, then now you have one more negative than you have positives, and therefore the overall charge is negative one. That is not only an ion, but since it's a negatively charged ion, we call it an anion. If you did the reverse and take one electron away, keeping the protons the same, now you have one fewer negative charge than positive charges, and therefore the overall ion is positively charged, right? In which case it's called a cation. Those are the two kinds of ions. Here we have a neutral atom, though, in slide 4. Specifically, this is a helium atom. Now, there's only one reason that this is a helium atom. And in general, there is only one reason why any given kind of atom is that type of atom, meaning that type of element. What is the only thing that matters? What is it that makes any given element that element?
How many protons it
is? The number of protons, and that is it. Not the number of electrons, not the number of neutrons. The periodic table is arranged in the order of atomic number, as we call it, which simply is the number of protons that are in that kind of atom. And notice that helium is number 2. On this periodic table, all of the atomic numbers are the number in the upper right of each box. Hydrogen is the simplest atom because it has, by definition, one proton. And most hydrogen atoms will have that one proton and one electron, and that's it. No neutrons. But however many neutrons it has, it's hydrogen only if it has exactly one proton. If it's any other number of protons, it's some other element. Okay, that's what is the basis for the elements. And there's only roughly 100 of those in nature. This one happens to have 2 neutrons for helium, but it's that's not what makes it helium. What makes it helium is that there are 2 protons. It's a neutral atom of helium, though, because it also has 2 electrons, and those negatives add up with the positives to be 0. It's not an ion, in other words. Okay, so remind me that we're on 5. And now we'll go to the laboratory.